and now going on with some of those things. If we look at who's the government's record going after the critics, right? I mean, they never do this because there are laws and some people are violated, and they selectively go after some of them. And in most cases, they come up with these laws because they observe a certain pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have observed for the past few years is that people, especially young people, have become very active online. And bloggers are making names, and you know, they're being followed, and there is this trend. And just to make sure that they don't go, you know, beyond the limits that these lines that government has drawn, they come up with these laws.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a government that actually feels any kind of responsibility to explain itself to the people. So they don't think, I mean, they don't function with that kind of psychology. At the end of the day, they don't have to explain it. They just come up, and that's the law, and you have to. They may concern as well, you know, at times, how do we explain it? How do we justify it to the world when they're, you know, brought up to certain, I guess, places and positions? But would you agree that there is more discussion of so-called sensitive issues, especially when it comes to religion online now? We observe, I mean, we on a daily basis, there are Uzbeks who openly express their sympathy for ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
They support what ISIS is doing. I mean, I can tell you, every time we post a story about ISIS committing some kind of a horrible crime, more comments come in favor of them on the pages of the Voice of America. You know, that they're doing the right thing. Yeah, they deserve it. Yeah, I'm with ISIS on this.
And those are people posting from inside Uzbekistan or from diaspora?
You can actually see who they are. And that I personally find appalling. Because, you know, you can't track them. I mean, whoever they are, you know, somebody's from Jizza, somebody's a teacher in, you know, in Namangan. Would you make a similar assessment that people are more daring now? Despite all this, you know, despite the warnings and threats and the restrictions, obviously. You know?
Mm. Well, the two things. I think they're daring, but not understanding what they're doing.
Right.
That's one. And I think there is no discussion, you know, despite, you know, this proliferation of the blogs and websites in Uzbekistan, I don't think there is good discussion of contentious issues that the society is facing, right? Again, before, well, the presentation, you know, partially touched this issue, right? Again, to the, you know, with regard to freedom of religion, right, the issues of hijab, beard, you know, praying in prison, in government offices, in educational institutions are the key ones, right? And you see the questions about them coming over and over again. In addition to, can I wear a red t-shirt, you know, in public places, you know, or can I have a, you know, silk pijama and you know, slip it? You know, in addition to this type of questions, you obviously have these questions, right? And those, well, their persistency, their repetition shows that how, you know, people take it serious and they're really concerned because of the prohibitions. Now, the question comes and the Sheikh Muhammad Sadiq Muhammad Yusuf says, it is obligatory, do your best. You know, generally it's like this. But there is no discussion of how we can, you know, how we can mobilize people, you know, to, I don't know, peacefully demonstrate, to write letters to our president, to understand religious feelings and allow, you know, religious dress. You know, at least for, well, mature people, you know, over, let's say, 25 or 20, you know, 8, etc., right? So there is no discussion like this. You know, yeah, the people are asking those questions. They would ask even, well, my husband was tortured in prison, you know, just because of praying or saying, you know, or doing something religious. You know, what we can do, he says, you know. Or, you know, there was a famous journalist who was imprisoned, right? And he was covering lots of religious issues. People were asking about him, saying, can you do something to release him? It is also obvious that he was imprisoned for no good reason. And he would say, I did my best. He's open on that. It is on the website. You know, I did my best, but nothing happened. And that's, you know, partially when I said, you know, it is generating now this feeling of hopelessness. And that's why you are looking for the communities, for the group of people that can help you to realize your goals to be religious. And that's partially is helping people to become radicalized. Because in the groups like ISIS, they see that, you know, you can be a Muslim, you can, you know, basically realize all the things that you thought a good Muslim should do.
I have another just quick question. I mean, do you it under Ahmad Sayyid, right? You have had the honor of being his
he was my supervisor even for my thesis.
Who is now running for president again for the second time. The argument in Dashkent for these illegal terms of President Karimov has been that, well, we've changed the terms of the we have changed the presidential terms constitutionally several times. So each time there's a
change,
it is a new term.
Yeah.
And I mean, while they're not actively saying this, when you ask
it's implied.
Presidential advisors, that's their, you know, go answer.
Yeah.
When you're a law student, and you know, or when you when you talk to your colleagues back at home, are there people who actually think that that's a valid argument?
But people are not even do not even know about this argument. One,
really?
Yeah. Well, at least from my circles, let's see. No, I don't think anyone was even asking or questioning legitimacy of, you know, this type of thing. And you know, the fact that the president is running for another term and there is no even discussion of its constitutionality means that the government indeed is assuming that that's the correct way of understanding constitution, but it is not. You cannot just, you know, stay in power and, you know, every you know, 8 years make a, you know, amendment to the constitution saying from five we are going to seven to two consecutive terms and then from seven to five. And every time I do so, there is a new term for a president. It's just, you know, there is no justification. Well, from my circles, I know no one who is buying or knows that argument or even questioning that the guy, you know, the Karimov can run another term. If you have a, you know, different perspective on that, or
no,
if
no, I mean, I just like to pick, you know, people's brains sometimes about this because, you know, you have people who call themselves warriors.
Yeah.
President has what 15 presidential advisors now who specifically advise him on. On legislature, you know.
Yeah.
So and you know, yeah, they don't go on the record with you, but they like to talk about this.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember talking to Ahmad Sayyidov when he was here in Washington, you know, last year in December, and he's like, "Well, we don't want to talk about that now." But what I wanted to know was what he thought of the change that was made in 2011. Nobody was talking about presidential elections.
Correct.
At that time, but
yeah,
you know. Karimov was very serious about making, you know, changes to the Uzbek constitution,
mm-hmm.
you know, giving more power to the prime minister, and then changing the term. I mean, he is.
Yeah, actually, the assumption was that before leaving, he is cutting
yeah,
the term
exactly.
from seven to five. Right.
It was really amazing if you think about it now.
Yeah.
Because it went unnoticed.
Correct.
In many ways, that you know, it wasn't really discussed. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some interesting comparisons to this law in Uzbekistan and the Holocaust denial laws in Europe. Question of jurisdiction, for instance, you do something, there's a case of a German who immigrated to Canada decades ago and he got printed some stuff that was considered Holocaust denial in Germany. He got deported from Canada to Germany and spent many years in prison. And talk about the silliness of the law. The French Holocaust denial law says you can't contradict the findings of the Nuremberg Tribunal. Well, there's a case of the Katyn Forest Massacre where 3,000 Polish officers were slaughtered. Nuremberg trial, the tribunal found the Germans guilty for that.
Mm-hmm.
After the fall of the Soviet Union, the Russians admitted, no, it was us. But if you say that in France, theoretically, you could be prosecuted for Holocaust denial. So it might be interesting to compare those two situations.
No, I think this is a good discourse, and I would welcome if Uzbeks would say, "Hey, look, well, we understand freedom of speech, right? But look, you know, just develop the argument, and I would be good to hear to listen to you." But even that is not happening, right? There are people, you know, in response to what happened in Paris, they're just saying, right, everyone is an enemy of Islam, and that there is a conspiracy against it to denigrate it, right? And it directly denigrated the, you know, the prophet as if, you know, everyone is, you know, thinking that the only thing they can do is, or, you know, concerned about is this, yeah? And I would welcome people discussing it, you know, saying how come, you know, the law prohibits, you know, gives so much freedom of expression in France, but at the same time limits when it comes to Holocaust denial, you know, fine, just discuss it, and that's not happening.
Morning.
Wanted to come back on the religious issue. Is Mohammed Sadiq Mohammed Yusuf back to Tashkent?
I believe so, yeah. That's, he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So all these new Islamic websites are really kind of done officially under his supervising.
Correct.
And so my question is, coming back to the consistency of the government, is that, I mean, you have on one side him saying you have the right to do that as a good Muslim, and on the other side the government saying the contrary. Mm-hmm. Is that one constructed logic of offering the two narratives? And because they realize you cannot just have one without having the other, and therefore they play on both cards, offering the two narratives, or is that an uncontrolled diversity that is emerging? And I mean, it's a key question, because the point is this government in charge really of the ideological construction which is going on now around Islam, or is that just uncontrolled? I mean,
that's a very high level of thinking you're asking from the government. But I think there is a reason why he came back, right? And due to my, knowledge, he's the main person to actually tackle the extremist views in Uzbekistan and bring this moderation to Uzbek Muslims, right? So that's why I think he's left with this, some sphere of maneuvering where he can, speak what he thinks. And he's very frank. He's saying hijab is obligatory. He's very straightforward on that, right? Beard, he says all four major schools, agreed that it is, very, 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 advised, which is very close to being obligatory as well, right? So he's very open on that. But I think the government also is very clear, clever, and knows that the websites he is running are so shallow, right? And I'm not exaggerating, when I say shallow. All the posts that you find there are translations from, Russian websites. And the guy who is translating, I know him personally, does not even understand what he's reading, right? There was an occasion when he actually translated an article that had a negative, message against Muslims and Islam, right? I challenged him on that. And I said, you don't even know the substance which you are translating. And you dare to post that on your website that are read by millions. And I have no problem with an article that is against Islam, right? But the guy actually thought that the guy has an argument to support Islam, The guy didn't understand the message of the article. So I think the government knows that with those type of the articles and websites, that they'll still, it cannot nurture a vibrant, a strong community that can at some point become critical and challenge the government. That's why it's just letting it go. And it's basically if you visit it, it's the last, I think the posts from the last 3 to 4 months are basically on West bashing. It's West is like this. West, all the problems are coming from the West, and it's very scary to go to those websites, I think. And I think they are doing a huge disservice to Muslims, especially because they are creating this, wrong understanding of Islam. They are shifting the focus from their own problems in Uzbekistan, including basic practice of religious the tenets, right, to what is happening in Europe, that homosexuality there, that you can post cartoons and the others, right? So
that's why, to continue, but that's more kind of open discussion, when you say that doesn't help developing a kind of critical thinking that would go against the government, in a sense, that's not the point. You can have this shortcut Islam, and that's also a good way to go against the government one day or another. I mean, it can be a stupid, I don't think they need any kind of deep things, even with a very limited and totally stupid understanding of Islam, it can suddenly also become a tool against the government. Yeah. So in both cases, they will be losing in playing that game, but that's, and I already asked the question when Dilaram and Cathy and you were presenting me that, because I always remember how the Muslim spiritual board during Soviet time were very ambiguous and were able to have a large room of maneuver and say yes to the Soviet narrative, and at the same time having a lot of real theological debates and discussion, excommunication and so on. And now I cannot believe that if Mohammed Sadiq Mohammed Yusuf can do that, then the other, the official spiritual board and spiritual authorities are totally empty and purely bureaucratic things. I'm sure there are just things we don't see. And then one day suddenly you can, that can shift, and suddenly they will all be very Islamic. Well, I don't know. I mean, I always wonder if it was possible during Soviet time, then there are things probably that we don't see.
Even if the pressure, I guess, now is much, there's much more pressure now than there was in the 70s, in the Soviet Union, in Central Asia, I guess.
But I always wonder, I mean, around him, I mean, what the muftia, what is the position of the muftia if they have to choose between the official position of the government and Mohammed Sadiq Mohammed Yusuf? How do they position themselves? What do they think?
So this, that's a great question, I think, and that goes to the Committee on Religious Affairs, right? And it is, you know, its spokesperson, unofficial spokesperson, is Abdulaziz Mansour, who is a scholar and who is the first who translated Quran into Uzbek, right? And the guy is just interesting. He posted his statement on the correctness of celebrating New Year being a Muslim. So he was justifying it, which is fine. But see, the narrative he's trying to bring is again this old sorted approach of looking from the text. Just leave the text alone. You know, if you can celebrate New Year or not, just be civic. You know, say, you know, there's again, you know, lacking the discourse that you are in a secular country, that you can be a Muslim, but at the same time, if you want to celebrate New Year, go for that, you know, as long as you don't take it as a Christmas and religious, you know, holiday, and the others, if your religious thoughts, you know, convictions contradict to that. He was saying, well, here is the surah from Quran, or from, you know, quote from Quran stating that every, you know, when the new year comes, you have to be thankful for the next year, you know, something like this. And his argument was built on that. And his second very controversial position is on hijab. He was actually making an argument that the way the hijab is worn in other countries, in other Muslim countries, is not, is country specific, one. Second, that the Muslims in Uzbekistan always were wearing hijab in a different way from the back instead of, you know, bringing it down. And he was saying that that's the way we should continue, is the way how the national approach does it. And it's incredible, you know. That's how, when the religious authorities become, you know, politicized, you know, you come up with this, you know, just, you know, arguments that make absolutely no sense.
Michael, you have a question.
Yeah, I'm Michael Hawley, work for Open Society Foundations, another NGO that used to work in Uzbekistan. the question I had actually sort of touches on a couple of things that have come up recently in this discussion. One very short question was on the shortcut Islam that you talk about, which I think is really fascinating. And the question there is, where is the stuff coming from? Is this locally generated content that's being shared around? Is it people picking up things? Is it both? And secondly, you know, obviously since the blogs and the discussions that people can have in Uzbekistan are clearly very limited, I was wondering, are there blogs, are there platforms based outside Uzbekistan that people are going to where you might see more, you know, I don't know, sensitive discussions? I mean, Nabokov mentioned VOA, he mentioned also Lit and Fergana, but I'm wondering, are there more specifically religious sites and authorities who are writing or posting, it's say in Russia or the Caucasus or the Middle East or wherever, that perhaps are getting attention, if you have a sense of that?
Well, on the first question of who is generating the shortcuts, right, on those Instagram beautiful photos with a quote from Islam and the others, I don't know who is generating that. But I think from the stories I read, at least, you know, it would be a religious story, and then it would be, you know, how, you know, a Muslim wife should be behaving towards her husband, or, you know, this type of things. There are so many mistakes, you know. It's just maybe even teenagers who are writing it just for fun and then sharing it. And people would be, my friends, who are in the range of 30 to 40 years old, would be sharing that, literally.
All my Facebook friends, yeah, I see it all the time.
But it is incredible, you know. It is as if, you know, to share something, well, the way how I understand, right, you have to read it. Think about it. You really like it. You synthesize it, right? You think that it is of worth to share, right? And then you share. Well, if you share that, you know, it already shows at what level you are. And that's just scary at what level they are. Because I consider my friends to be very educated people. They are educated, right? But if they are doing this, I can imagine what is the younger generation who, I think, compared to my age, are less fortunate with regard to being critical, to being, you know, more, you know, open-minded, to be educated. The next one, outside sources, I don't know any of those, right? But I think it is not... as active as it used to be. The Overton Qara's website, yeah, Islam Awaza, which was, you know, basically managed by his son and his team, is good. And I think that scholar is good, and you know, and I hope he had more, you know, words to say, because he, although maybe he had very, you know, strict views about Islam, and that's natural. If you are in Uzbekistan and if you have never left Uzbekistan, right, everything that is happening outside Uzbekistan is hostile against you, against Islam, right? But the guy was forced to leave Uzbekistan. He lived in Sweden, and his several sermons, he was talking about the values of democracy. You wouldn't see that in the sermons of the religious scholars in Uzbekistan, right? He was saying about the values of democracy, of free speech, of freedom of religion, and he was saying that there are so many things we can learn from the West, which is not the discourse that you can see in Uzbekistan again. That's unfortunately that he's that type of voice was cut from the, you know, general, you know, the discussion of religious freedoms and secularism.
We're nearly running out of time. One last question. Yes, Navajo.
Just to continue this fascinating conversation about the whole movie, I actually agree with Noah Ducker's conclusions on this, that the government of Uzbekistan came to the conclusion that they needed to allow some kind of discussion, that the religion, you know, the board, Religious Affairs, Islamic Affairs Board, wasn't necessarily doing it. I mean, they were not necessarily. It was kind of a strategic compromise that Uzbekistan reached, you know, where they basically decided that we have to let this happen, and let's choose him, former Mufti, who still enjoys a huge popularity.
Exactly.
He has a huge following. Exactly. And, of course, you know, there was some compromise made with him where he would still be who he is, that he wouldn't fundamentally change some of his positions, you know, where he's still advocating for hijab, you know, something that the government doesn't want him to, and other things. But at the same time, he's not necessarily breaking certain rules.
No.
So it was a compromise. And when you look at this huge network that they have created, practically covering everything, I mean, from sex to politics, right? Everything is discussed in that. And it became very popular. And a lot of people, as you were saying, you know, some of us naively following those pages, because you can't find anything else in Uzbek on those topics. And with the emergence of social media, I think it was very easy to sell. And, I mean, there are people like you who look at the content very critically, but I think thousands of Uzbeks still follow them. There are some huge discussions, you know, on those pages. And that was a political decision. I think it was government's decision to let that happen.
Yeah.
I mean, would you be surprised if he comes back again as a full-fledged, you know, Mufti?
I don't think that would happen.
He doesn't seem to be getting old.
Oh yeah, he looks the same, you know, for the last 20
years.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I don't think so. But the thing that you mentioned again, that goes to my point about the shortcut Islam. I was reading the Eugeni Morozov's book, right? It's fascinating. It's, I wouldn't agree with all the points he has, but he has a very good point still, right? And he has this comparison of what happened in West Germany versus East Germany, right? And how West Germans decided to allow East Germans to watch West German TV, right? Because actually it helped to consolidate the power, because people were just, instead of going after political things, even if they have access to listen to West German news, right, about what is happening around the world, they were looking for entertainment, right? They were looking, you know, TV, American TV shows and series. And I think, in a way, the Islamos is serving that purpose, right? It has all this information that somehow satisfies religious feelings. They say, oh, so good, I'm Muslim, right? But then that's the limit, you know? You cannot go beyond that. You cannot be on... And that would, again, I think, in the long run, is bad for us, because people don't know about democracy. There is good amount of those who hate it, especially after the Paris events, right? They say, what is this freedom of expression, right? You know, that they're, you know, openly saying, you know, bad words, they're scolding it, etc. But but I don't know that there's, you know, on the documents we are secular and democratic, but I think in you know, the developments that we are going through it's really, really strange, and I don't know what to expect in the future. It's
whatever discussions that we are having within the Uzbek communities everywhere, the discussions discussion and the debates are so primitive, you know, we're still sort of who's right and who's wrong, we're not going any deeper. Very superficial. I mean, when Nazarov was shot almost 2 years ago and this became such a big story, I mean, I remember us discussing it and also Lee discussing it at BBC, and we couldn't really move on from whether he was an extremist, like, you know, as the government put it, or he was a credible Islamic scholar. You don't even get into the ideas that they were talking about. It was basically, oh, you know, I mean, I remember this very heated conversation that Ozodli kept on playing between him and Galima Bukharbayeva. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Where they actually debated about the rights of women. And if any woman listened to that conversation, I did not like personally what he was saying. To me, he came out as an extremist. But then we're getting one side of the picture. You know, we're not hearing his. So, I mean, I think it's up to us to generate that conversation,
mm-hmm.
you know, to kind of inspire people to go deeper. And it's difficult. I mean, how do you really, like, get people curious about these issues? Because, first of all, we don't have the knowledge base to
mm-hmm.
do that. And second of all, you have to have the audience, too, which is very limited.
Now, I don't think if you ask any single Muslim in Uzbekistan now, right, if hijab is obligatory, or about the supposed obligations of a Muslim
mm-hmm.
wife towards the husband, right? There is absolutely, I don't think that there is any doubt that everyone would say it is obligatory, you know? No one would say, you know, well, it is obligatory, but we are in this society, let you decide.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, circumstances dictate what you do, how you do, right? And I would say, you know, it is obligatory. But at the same time, they know that the government behaves, you know, prohibits it, and I don't know how they are reconciling this.
There have been some very ordinary local journalists in Uzbekistan who wanted to talk to the people on the street
mm-hmm.
about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, because local journalists, even though they work in a very restricted environment, they know this is a huge topic.
Exactly.
And they wanted to basically go out to the street and ask people, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
You know, should Uzbek women, you know, cover their heads or not? And they were not allowed. And the question is, like, why not? You know, why not? You could at least censor it later. I mean, if, you know, if the majority ends up saying yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so sorry, we're behind. So please join me to thank Akmar for this wonderful presentation. Thank you to all of you for the discussion. Thank you.
Sure.